Hello, and welcome to the Recon Rod. I'm Dane Cash.
And I am Cosmo Catalano.
And we are back in our respective recording studios to talk GP West France.
I was under the impression we were here for GP Plouet today.
Oh, no, I thought we were here to talk the GP West France. Hold on, let me look. Oh, it's the same thing. Sorry.
Same race?
Yeah, apparently the GP Plouet hasn't been called the GP Plouet for some time now. But, you know, you wouldn't really know it. I don't know that I've ever heard a single rider that I've ever spoken to call this race the GP West France, which has been its official name since 1989, I think.
I kind of prefer West France. I feel like it's more, you know, Plouet could be anything. It could be somebody messing up their words, but you say West France and it translates pretty well, even into English.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense what that means. I think it sounds a lot closer to what it means than the way it's spelled. But it's so, the naming thing is like, it's so obscure that every time you see it written officially, people will write the GP West France dash or hyphen Plouet, just to remind you, oh, this is that race that used to be called the GP Plouet.
What was West France Plouet ever its official name?
It used to be, so it's technically Plouet is the four-day event that sort of encompasses a bunch of different smaller races. And then there's the World Cup event, though, the Women's World Cup event. And then on the final day is the Grand Prix West France, the final of 4 days, the four jour of Plouet. So I think when it grew, they decided to make the men's race the GP West France. But like I said, I don't think I've ever heard a rider call it the GP West France, which is sort of the same thing for the Vattenfall Sick Classics. I've never heard a rider call it that. It's always Hamburg. I think they just say, you know, screw these new name changes. We're just going to keep calling it what it used to be called. Like, I've never heard anybody call it Il Lombardia now. Either that's the official name now.
Yeah, no, it seems like the sort of thing cycling might want to work on in the whole making itself accessible field is maybe, you know, going down to one or two names per event. You know, the Super Bowl, I guess the Rose Bowl has a nickname. Like the granddaddy of them all. But for the most part, you know, they just Fall Classic, World Series. I don't know. It seems like the sort of thing that is part of the mondialization package they should have. Just a streamlining of event names and presentation.
I'm in agreement with that. I think the nicknames aren't necessarily a bad thing. It's just only an issue when I think people literally don't know what the race is officially called. That could be a potentially.
Like you ask a professional rider and they're like, what?
Yeah, what's that? West France? You know that race you're riding in next weekend? Oh, okay. Yeah, now I know.
I mean, yeah, if you're going to start picking at things about cycling, you probably still want to start with maybe just taking the Tour de France down a little bit. I mean, even in France, you know, this is a really cool race, in my humble opinion, as a viewer and commentator. And yet, it's a total also-ran. It's up there in terms of World Tour points with a ton of other events, but it's still like completely lost in the shuffle when it could be, you know, you've got your Roubaix, you've got your Tour de France, and you could have your GP Plouet, except after the Tour, there's just not much, you know, the sport, the air sort of goes out of the sport in the current setup.
It's sort of a shame too, I think, because the start list, at least in the last couple of years, has been really great, and the racing itself has been really great, and it might be kind of a recent development, and I think because people are so kind of locked in and on history and cycling that maybe it takes them a little while to come around to this race because it wasn't always the spectacle sort of event that it is now. If you go back and look at the list of winners from the start of this race, all the way back in 1931, you will notice that for the first roughly 50 years, 60 years even, there's like three non-French winners, which is pretty impressive that they've had such a strong dominance of this race. Also a pretty good symbol that there's not a lot of international interest for the first 60 years of the event.
It's not an uncommon thing, I think, in a lot of one-day races, and to a lesser extent at Grand Tours or at multi-day events. You know, you really have the kind of first 60 years dominated by riders from the home country.
And then I think also, like you see in other races, this was a Pro Tour event from the start of the Pro Tour, and since then it's been a very much an international sort of event, drawing all sorts of big stars and a lot of talented riders of various different skill sets. And so in terms of mundialization, I think the Pro Tour has certainly achieved that goal. Upgrading this race to the Pro Tour, suddenly you get all these international stars. And while it maybe isn't also ran, it definitely draws the talents.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, like it's, that's the thing, is the riders know where the World Tour points are, and this race has them, regardless of whether or not it's got, you know, the eyeballs. I think it's also a pretty good race because of the convenience for building up for Worlds, although we are, as cycling becomes more and more like a real sport, I think we're seeing fewer and fewer riders take things on as training. You can get some really good training for Worlds by trying to win this race, you know. It's a circuit, which is not the most common thing at the top level of the sport. It's long, and it has a sort of Worlds-like feel to it. There's a number of ways the race can shake out, and while you're still racing with professional teams rather than national teams, you know, it's a really good warm-up. You know, the last two world champs have ridden this race first.
I think we're starting to see really a shift from the previously held notion that you have to ride the Vuelta to be ready for Worlds. Riders are starting to ride the circuit races, the Vattenfall Classics, the Plouay, and then the Canadian Classics, or the Tour of Britain as their main build-up to Worlds. And now we have, thanks to that, we have really good start lists, I think, of riders who are very much interested in contending in these races, coming here to, even if it is a build-up, to actually contend and not just to get in some training miles. So I think it's a really good thing for this race and for the other circuit races. It's a shame they have announced, by the way, that this is the last year, I think, that it's going to be a circuit. Supposedly next year they're going to go from point A to point B, which is, it's kind of a bummer. I mean, as a fan, circuit races are always really great to watch because you actually get to see them go by more than once. I mean, you don't wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning, you camp out somewhere, and then you see them go by for 30 seconds, which is what you get in the tour. With a circuit race, you actually get to see the guys go by 10, 15 times, and it's going to be a shame for the people of West France to lose that if this race does indeed leave the circuit format behind.
Yeah, I think it's even better spectating on TV because you get a sense of what the pack is going to look like, how the teams are working at different points in the race, sort of with the variable of the race course itself kind of eliminated or taken down a lot because it's the same loop. So, you know, you have an apples to apples comparison of how hard is this climb. You know, the pace is going to be different. The teams who are riding are going to be different. But at the same time, you can say, remember the last lap, you know, they were in a big clump and there were three BMC guys at the front. And now there's a 7-rider break from 6 different teams and you've got, you know, Katusha trying to chase it down. That sort of thing, I think, makes the sport a lot easier to understand.
I agree. And speaking of that route, let's take a closer look at the circuit, the West France circuit. And we'll take a closer look at the various challenges of the 229.1 kilometers from start to finish. The race starts and finishes in Plouay in Brittany in France, but the road from start to finish is a pretty roundabout one. The riders will take on 8 laps of a 26.9 kilometer circuit. Each lap, early on, there's the Côte du Lazo climb, which is a little over a kilometer at between 5 and 6%. And then there's a descent, a sort of a gentle uphill, a descent again, and then the second harder climb of the lap, the Côte de Thi-Méric, which is, again, a little over a kilometer, between 5 and 6%. But there is a stretch right in the middle that kicks up near about 10%. And they do that 8 times before they hit a final lap, a shorter lap of 13.9 kilometers. In that final lap, they take on those same 2 tougher climbs, the Côte du Lazo and the Côte de Thi-Méric, but they come in faster succession. There's less space between the 2 climbs. And from the top of the Côte de Thi-Méric, there's only 3.5-ish kilometers to the line. So if you attack on either one of those late climbs and you still have an advantage over the summit of the Côte de Thi-Méric, there is a chance that you hold out all the way to the finish. And that's sort of the battle that we've seen these last few years, because the finish itself is flat. And we see guys go on the attack on these 2 late climbs trying to stick a long-range strike. but the sprinters know that they have a great chance in this finish. And so there's always this showdown between the guys who are up the road and the sprinting teams, which are trying to chase them down and set up a big group sprint.
To a certain extent, that is the way every bike race works, right? You know, there's either the break's going to win or there's going to be some large group finishing the sprint. But this course is really well suited to make it not exactly clear how that's going to shake out. The climb, that last climb really, like, it kind of comes up and dumps everybody on this really wide section of road. There's a lot of looking around. You know, people are really trying to assess if they do work at one moment in time, what other riders are going to benefit from that? Like, who's in the second group trying to come up to them? Do they have to worry about, you know, anybody faster than them being in a small group? Plus, the run into the finish is a relatively gradual downhill. That makes it sound like they're going slowly, but the pack is usually flying down it. And with almost more speed than they'd have on a tougher descent, because it's so relatively easy to go fast in a clump. So it's definitely one of those races that's never really settled until the final 100 meters or so.
And even when it is, I guess you could say, settled, it's sort of selective enough that maybe the guys that you would expect to be really strong there aren't necessarily going to be the strongest. I mean, even if you end up with a big sprint, you'll sometimes see a sort of has been not really in the prime of his career anymore classic star like Filippo Pizzotto.
So you're talking about Pippo Pizzotto.
Yeah, we can say his name.
It's okay.
Well, Giacomo Nazzolo was kind enough to come on the show this time around. We're going to hear from him in a few minutes. And his 2013 bid to win this race was unfortunately snatched away at the last moment by Filippo Pizzotto, which you wouldn't really expect Pizzotto to beat Nazzolo, the points champion of the 2015 Giro, in a heads-up sprint. But because this is such a wearing you down sort of race, you do sometimes get that finish where even the fast finishers are going to be beaten by maybe the classic specialists who are a little more used to the tough days. So speaking of Nazzolo and the various other likely contenders for this race, let's get into the start list. Taking a look at the start list, there's a whole lot of riders here who I think have a chance, so we will try to hit on as many as we can, but also get into as many of them in depth as we can.
That is quite the disclaimer there, basically saying we're going to go through a lot of people, but some of them in depth. But I believe you, and I believe in you, and I'm just going to mention that this is a provisional start list, so we don't ever really know, especially at this point in the year, though less so than right after the tour, who exactly is going to be on the start line. So we're doing our best with the information we have.
We're working from a start list that is up to date as of August 27th, and I'm sure that this is the most up to date start list that we have up to this point. So hopefully things don't change too much, but you never know. Sylvain Chavanel of YAM Cycling won the race last year, but he is not back this year because he's racing in the Vuelta, so there is no returning champion, no repeat winner this year, but plenty of riders who I think are really well poised to sort of slide right into that role. First kind of team or riders that I want to mention is BMC. First of all, they're doing really well this point in the season. They've had a lot of success these last couple weeks. Greg Van Avermaet, to me, looks the best out of the many talented riders on this start list. He has done well. I was going to say he's done well in this race in the past, but it's more like he's come close to doing well at this race in the past, because in multiple occasions in this race, it seemed like he has launched attacks or thought about launching attacks. It looked like they were going to work out, but they just kind of barely missed out. But he does have that sort of talent that he's able to get away on just this sort of climb, not too steep, not too long. It's just the sort of climb that I think he can thrive on. And even if he doesn't get away, he's also getting better and better every year at sprinting. A couple of years ago, there was a time when he couldn't even beat Fabian Cancellara in a sprint. Nowadays, I feel like that would be kind of a foregone conclusion. He's gotten a lot better at fast finishing. He even beat Peter Sagan earlier this year in a sprint. So he's able to win in a variety of ways, and he's got an excellent BMC team around him to either support him or to maybe provide alternatives.
I think the best example of how deep BMC is the fact that Philippe Gilbert is the guy we're mentioning second. Like, one of the best, I'm going to go and say the best non-Fabian Cancellara one-day rider of the late aughts and early, what are we in, tens, teens?
Tens, yeah, I would say tens probably.
Yeah, and like, you know, he's getting on in years, but still a threat. We saw him pick up Amstel last year. He had a couple stages in the Giro, kind of silencing the doubters. Ben Hermans has been riding great. Honestly, the guy with Dossard number one for BMC is Sylvain Dillier, who had a really strong Arctic Tour of Norway, taking a stage. I think best young rider, was it? Or was it, you were there, best young rider?
I was there. I guess I should know. He was indeed the best young rider. Yes.
Yeah, so just a ton of guys. Plus, you know, you've got the usual super supporting staff. You got Michael Schaar, who is just an ox and a half when it comes to cranking out watts. So I think even though they may not win, if it comes down to a group sprint, BMC will definitely be the guys kind of animating the race.
And speaking of group sprints, I think there's a couple of riders who really stand out as probably the top favorites for that scenario.
Marcel Kittel is on the provisional start list. Certainly at his best, he's got the most pure speed of anyone in the race, maybe anyone in the world, but he doesn't exactly have the versatility, the legs for getting over the climbs, and he hasn't had a great year, really. I'm having a hard time seeing him making it to the finish line. He didn't make it to the finish in Hamburg, and this race is harder. So obviously he's a big favorite if he's there, but I just don't know if that's going to happen in this race where
you sort of have to have the ability to kind of go long and handle the 220 plus kilometers and still come to the end fresh. And I think the guy that really comes to mind in that situation is a rider who has won the Tour of Flanders and Milan-San Remo. That would, of course, be Alexander Kristoff. I don't think Kristoff has any problems with the distance. The climbs are going to really put him on the limit, but you know, he's shown an ability when he's really motivated to get over some tough climbs. He won the bunch sprint behind the lead group last year to take eighth place, which is obviously not a great result, but I feel like if the rest of the pack had reeled in the riders up front that year, he probably would have won the race. So showing some excellent form right about now, I think he's got a great shot at it. The rider who I think is most likely to challenge him in that sprint is a rider who has been on the podium in this race in the past, and that is the aforementioned Giacomo Nizzolo. Nizzolo, back in 2013, was really, really close to winning this race until about 50 meters before the line when Filippo Pazzato passed him and took the day. But this is a really important race for Nizzolo, and it's a race that kind of suits his ability. He's one of those guys who I think can handle the distance really well. And he's also pretty good in kind of a messy finish, and after such a long day, that's kind of, I think, what you can expect, even if this does come down to a sprint. So all of that being the case, we reached out to Giacomo, who's been on the show before, and we really like talking to Giacomo because he's always got a lot of good insight. So we'll play for you a quick chat we had with Giacomo earlier this week. He's a guy that we really think can do another good ride in this year's GP West France. Giacomo, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks to you.
And we're here to talk GP West France Plouay. It's a race that I know is pretty important to you. So first of all, maybe we can talk about the race that we just finished this weekend, the Vattenfall Classics in Hamburg. You were third in that race. How are you feeling coming out of that race, maybe both physically and also from a motivational standpoint?
Yeah, well, we can say before Hamburg, I didn't have a real good week. I mean, I was feeling not really good after Eneco Tour, and also in Eneco Tour, the shape was not the best one. But then, okay, in Hamburg, I was really motivated mentally, and I felt also from the start better legs compared to Eneco Tour, and then in the end, I think I took the best result I could make, which is the third place behind two riders that in this moment are really, really strong. So I'm happy about the podium in Hamburg, and now looks like the feeling is better than last week. So I'm confident for Plouay, for sure. It will be a different race, but that's what we will see.
I know that this time of year, it can be a little bit difficult to determine which riders are targeting these races, and then maybe which riders are just here to sort of build up for Worlds. And I know we actually spoke last year, I think maybe a year ago today, you and I spoke, and you said that these races, Hamburg and Plouay, were really big targets for you, as opposed to just a build-up. Is that true again this year? Are these big targets for you?
Yeah, for sure are the big targets for me, but I think for everybody, because in those races you can make a lot of Pro Tour points, so it's a really good chance for every rider to make Pro Tour points. So for sure, a rider can use this race to get a step higher, looking for the Worlds. But also, everybody are really motivated and aggressive in these races to be at the top.
So would you say when you're riding in these events, it's pretty clear which riders are there to compete for the win and which riders are just there to get in kilometers?
Yeah, I don't think there are many guys who are there to make just kilometers, and especially in the cycling that I know now, in this time, it's really, really difficult to race just to do kilometers. So just for training, you train at home, and every time you put a number on your back, you go for it.
So with that intensity that everyone is bringing, do you really like this route? Do you think it suits you? Or do you find that you're usually on the limit in the climbs at Plouay? I mean, what's it like to race it for you?
Plouay, it's a different race compared to Hamburg, that's for sure. The last climb is really, really close to the end. That's open to many solutions, especially for the riders who want to attack. They have much more chances to arrive. Okay, for me, on one side, can be good that we have a short climb close to the end, maybe to drop some sprinters. But on the other side, I have to be really in a good shape to be up there after the climb and still have the legs to make a good sprint. If it will be a sprint, because as I said, most of the times some riders who attack, they arrive in the end because the last climb is really close to the finish.
In Hamburg, you said that against Greipel and against Christoph, that third was kind of, it felt like the strongest that you could do. Do you feel like for Plouay, it might be different? Do you feel like you're going to be capable of beating, say, Alexander Christoph or anybody else in that field in a sprint? Do you think that you're able to do that?
Yeah, well, it's not going to be easy anyway. There are strong riders, strong sprinters, so it would be hard to beat them. But if I have a chance, maybe it's better for me after a course like Plouay than Hamburg. But that's, as I said, depends from the shape, depends from the legs and the feeling of Sunday. But if there is a chance to beat them, maybe it's easier for me after a climb close to the finish.
So we'll look forward to seeing you giving it your best shot out there. And yeah, good luck.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks, Giacomo.
All right, thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was Giacomo Nizzolo. Again, I think he's probably the best suited to maybe take on Christoph if this does come down to a sprint. He hasn't quite nailed the battle against Christoph yet in his career, but one of these days I think he might be able to pull it off. So at this point in the season, when I think this is a big target for him, he's got a good chance. And then Trek also has Fabio Fellini, a very versatile rider who can get up some climbs and go on the attack as well in case they want to try to send somebody up the road to take some pressure off. So I like their team here.
You definitely have that similar dynamic of two guys who can get up the road and take the pressure off in Lotto. Tim Wellens is really on a tear at the end of last season. Hasn't been as strong this year. Someone who's not afraid to take that chance and try to go with the late move. And of course, behind him, he's got Tony Gallopin, who can also go with a break if it has to happen, but also a pretty strong sprinter. Like, I can see these two working a beautiful 1-2 in the final K, though they don't have Andre Greipel at the race this time, despite his win last weekend in Hamburg.
Greipel or no, they do have a lot of depth as well with Jens de Boucheret, Tij Benoot, Jürgen Rolands, who can finish fast and also go on the attack.
Speaking of riders who are going to be able to go on the attack, AG2R has a couple that I really like. Romain Bardet, obviously an excellent climber. He's the sort of guy who can win a stage in the Tour de France, which he, of course, did this year, and also plays highly in the overall. But he's also kind of an underrated one-day racer. He's been in the top 10 in Liège, I think, twice now. And that's not a race that you can just kind of, you know, fall into the top 10 in. You got to be pretty good at surviving a long parkour and still coming to the end kind of fresh. So I like Bardet's chances here. And even if he's not feeling the best, AG2R also has Alexis Villermos, who showed early on in this year's Tour de France that he can really hold his own on some tough climbs. So I like their ability to kind of do the 1-2 punch at the end of this race.
Julian Alaphilippe of Etics Quickstep is really, you know, if you're going to go with a story of the season for young guys in one days, I feel like he's got to be the man. You know, not showing up like an Eddie Merckx, but definitely, you know, a ton of versatility, a strong team, and a guy who's not afraid to just mix it up and go. He doesn't have a set pattern of racing yet.
Cosmo, you mentioned earlier a pair of riders, the two most recent world champions, Rui Costa and, of course, the current rainbow jersey wearer, Bykov Kwiatkowski. And I kind of want to group them together because I feel like both of them are really well-suited to this race. I mean, they're both excellent making late attacks. That's kind of what both of them have sort of made a career out of. And they also are both pretty handy in a sprint. So both the current and the past world champion, I think, really well suited to this race. But I'm putting them together, I think, also because in both cases, I really have no idea what their form is like. Both riders kind of came out of the Tour in rough shape. And so for both, the end of the season is always a really important time. Obviously, that's when you win your world championship. So I'm assuming that they're going to be building towards coming back into shape. I just don't really know what to expect. So
in case either one of them is feeling more like an also-ran, you mentioned Kwiatkowski's teammate Alaphilippe. Quickstep also has Bonin, Matteo Trentin, Stijn Vandenberg, Tony Martin, plenty of talent there. And Costa also has options on Lamprey with Chimalai, Diego Ulissi, maybe Roberto Ferrari.
Another rider with maybe some question marks surrounding him is Sepp van Marke. You know, that guy has all the ability in the world and really looked strong in a couple of races this spring, had some bad luck, flats when you really didn't want flats. And I think he would like nothing more than to pick up something, you know, out of this year that he can show his fans, show his sponsors, remind people that he still exists. I'm not sure this is really the race for him. He's certainly strong enough. He certainly has the power to do well here. I don't know if he has quite the race savvy. If he gets in a late move, though, lets other people kind of do the work, he does have the speed to do well in the end.
Maybe kind of getting into the more outsider conversation of guys who could try to go for that sort of late attack. You know, Orica Green Edge is coming here with, at least on the provisional start list, one of the two Yates bros, Simon, who is quite handy in sort of a hilly one-day event. They've also got Michael Albacini, who is fast in a sprint. He can go on the attack. Simon Clark, sort of the same thing. Orica Green Edge has the start list to really do well in a hilly race. I mean, that's kind of their bread and butter. So I think we can expect to see at least one of their riders do well here. It's just hard to pick one, but this is the sort of race that they tend to do very well in. Arthur Vichot of FDJ, the sort of guy who could go on the move here.
Ramunas Navardauskas.
Greg Obola is kind of a always in the top five, top 10 lurking kind of guy. Never really pulls off the big win, but you never know. This is always a surprise kind of race. So
Davide Rebellin. I suppose veteran Pierrick Fedrigo deserves a mention, as he did win this race all the way back in 2008. Andrea Fetti was the sort of surprise runner-up last year, riding for Southeast.
And then there's a whole list of sprinters who are kind of poised to potentially do well if this does come down to a sprint.
I think this is just the sort of race where Arno Demar can shine.
Tends to do well after a long day.
Lotto NL Jumbo probably going to look to Moreno Hoffland if this comes down to a big sprint.
Sky's got Elia Viviani and Ben Swift. Europe Car, Brian Kokar. A lot of these guys who, if they can make it to the finish, and if it does come down to a sprint, could do really well. It's just kind of a big question mark whether they can actually survive all the way and survive all these attacks and still be at the line. Heinrich Hausler, another guy who you think would do really well here, just given his skill set. JJ Lobato. So there's a whole host of guys who could kind of surprise us and survive all the way to the line and then end up taking the big win.
Hausler, that's a... I would be stoked if Hausler won this race. I'm just, I think everybody's kind of waiting for him to come back and do something. He's been close a couple of times, even at the Tour. So it would be cool. That's all I'm saying.
He had that really impressive national championship win earlier in the year.
He did.
It sounded like it was going to be the beginning of a big year for him, and it hasn't quite worked out. But this is a race that Yam Cycling won last year, and I think he's probably their best chance this year to win it. So can't count him out. All right, so now that we've tried to list off everybody with some sort of semblance of a chance at winning, do you want to take a stab at predicting the race winner?
I do, but I don't want to. So I'm looking at the most recent results. I'm looking at the season as a whole. I normally would pick Alexander Kristoff to win this, but he hasn't looked like he had the form of last year, where he really was the guy who won. He won everything he could at the Tour. He won the group kicks at this race. He won the group kick at Worlds. He's not quite there right now, as we saw. He had a strong finish last weekend, but not that just overpowering, go from 270 meters out and win. So, I think just because it was a breakaway last year, I think it's going to be a group kick. And I think I see Giacomo Nizzolo on top of that podium. I hate to try and, steal your spotlight, but I agree. He's pretty primed to win this thing. Picking a podium here is always a little messy, just because it is that sort of group. It's not a lead out group sprint. It's everybody prays to make it over the final hill. There's a clump of guys. They're shouldering for position. It's all across the road. So just kind of picking out of the air here. I'm going to go with Kristoff in second because he does have that form. And I'm going to say Van Avermaet in third because he's the sort of guy who can sprint with the sprinters when it becomes this kind of jumble at the end of a long or hard day.
Speaking of jumble, I'm actually going to name all three of the exact same riders, but I'm going to jumble up the order just a little bit. Because of Greg Van Avermaet's versatility and I think his ability to either win this in sort of a messy sprint or with an attack, I just think there's too many ways for him to win for me not to name him my top favorite here. I think he could do it in so many different ways. And then I also see Nizzolo as just, if this comes down to a sprint, I think he's a shoe-in for the podium. He's just so locked in on this race where other guys are maybe not quite at the right top level yet. So I also see Nizzolo up there. And then Kristoff, it's kind of hard not to name him as a potential sprint favorite. So same three, maybe a slightly different order, but I do see those as the three biggest favorites in what looks like a pretty strong start list and a pretty wide open race.
No, it's a wide open race, and it's, might be the last time we see a race like this for a little bit. I mean, you do still have circuit races at Worlds. You still have them in French Canada, but that might put a little more pressure on the shoulders of riders who have done well here before, knowing that this might be their last chance to pick up what should be a more important victory than it is.
For all the deserving talk of this kind of being a race that people maybe don't know as much about as they should, if you look at the list of recent winners, it's pretty damn impressive. Vincenzo Nibali won in 06. Gerrans has won here. Matthew Goss won here back when he was really good in that brief period of time. It's certainly got Tommy Vogler won here. So it's certainly got a list of winners that is inspiring of some pretty impressive ability. So I think it definitely deserves to be viewed as a hot ticket to success. So hopefully with more big name winners, we'll finally start to see that. Well, we will be back in a couple of days for our second Vuelta España show. We're going to record that the night before the Vuelta's first rest stage. So keep your eyes peeled for that, because that's going to preview the following six stages of the Vuelta. And not long after, we've of course got a third Vuelta show. We've got the Canadian GPs coming up, which I'll be making the trek up there for. And then Worlds, not that far off. So plenty of exciting racing to watch in the very near future, and we will be podcasting for all of it. So
yeah, a lot of it in North America
too. Indeed. So stay tuned. Until then, this has been the Recon Ride Podcast. I'm Dane Cash.
And I am Cosmo Catalano.
And that's our show.